Thank you very much, and good morning to both counsel. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. You are the third argument on our calendar. That third argument is A230071 in the matter of the welfare of the child of TMB and SEC parents. Counsel, I just have a few words before I turn things over to you and we hear your arguments this morning. First, I would just note that I'm joined this morning by my colleagues, Judges Johnson and Kirk. Just want to make sure that you're both aware of the time limitations for your arguments. Appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then appellant will have an opportunity for a 5-minute rebuttal. The time will be counted down by a clock that is being displayed on your screen. Can you both see that clock?
I can, Your Honor.
Mr. Moosbrugger? Yeah, okay, thank you. So please be mindful of the time limitations. And then we are making an audio recording of the arguments this morning. It would help us greatly, therefore, if you would please stay in the mute mode when you are not the person who is making the argument. And additionally, I would ask that you please introduce yourself and identify the party you represent at the beginning of your argument so that we have a record of that as well. That concludes my remarks. We're now ready to turn things over to the attorneys. We will begin with you, Mr. McGinney. You'll have 15 minutes when you're ready.
Thank you, and I'm ready. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jim McGinney, and I represent appellant SEC in this appeal from the termination of his parental rights from the district court. The standard of review for a TPR matter is regarding the district court's findings of fact. They are reviewed for clear error. And then the ultimate determination about whether to terminate or not is reviewed under an abuse of discretion. I'd like to start with the issue of appellant's incarceration status, which is the driving fact in this case. And much to, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but to my chagrin, I guess, SEC ended up, as counsel points out in their brief, currently incarcerated again since I submitted my brief in this case. And that's addressed in the respondent's brief. I believe it's on page 8, with the suggestion that that's another ground for a finding of abandonment and the assertion that appellant will be incarcerated now for several more years until the child's 9 years old. I just want to point out, while certainly this court can take judicial notice of the fact that appellant is currently incarcerated, the length of his incarceration, I think, is not in the record. The underlying sentence pronounced was 23 months. I believe appellant had a significant amount of jail credit time as reflected in the Mensis record that's referenced in the respondent's brief. And appellant's anticipated release date, I believe, is much sooner than what's posed in the respondent's brief, although it's unknown. The issue about incarceration and whether that constitutes abandonment really is one of the crux issues in this case. And I appreciate it's pointed out that the case law in Minnesota that I can review, and I talk about STAT and AMC, you know, both those cases, this court and the Supreme Court have said that incarceration alone is not enough to terminate someone's parental rights. It's insufficient to constitute a finding of abandonment. And then I don't dispute, and it's pointed out in respondent's brief, that SEC was incarcerated at the time of the child's birth. So the test is, right, that parental rights may be preserved if a parental relationship existed prior to incarceration. That's the site that the courts use. Well, what do you do in a situation where someone impregnates, or a woman for that matter gets pregnant, and then the child is born while the parent is incarcerated? How could that parent possibly have a parental relationship prior to their being incarcerated? It's impossible. And so I would pose to this court that requirement in the analysis for SEC should be considered, that it was impossible for him to have a relationship prior to incarceration. And then, of course, the second facts to consider are whether the imprisoned parent tried to or attempted to continue the relationship. And then the test is, right, to the best of his ability while incarcerated. Well, the facts are not in dispute here about what SEC did while he was incarcerated to attempt to preserve the relationship that he wanted to have with his child. The district court makes a finding that those attempts were nominal. But again, considering the limited access a prisoner has to funds, the limited access they have to phone use and other connections with, as we all probably refer to as outside, right? The limited access that a prisoner has to the outside world makes it extremely difficult to continue some kind of relationship with a child while you're incarcerated. And yet here, the facts, again, are not a dispute that SEC did make attempts at keeping in contact with his child. Despite the limitations available to him, he sent a gift card. You know, it's not in the record, I guess, but I think we all know a prisoner makes about 20 cents or 25 cents an hour. And so the fact that SEC was able to save enough money to even send a gift card is a lot more than a nominal attempt at remaining in contact with his child. He also, he did the things that STAT and AMC talk about. He sent letters to the foster parents. He sent other cards. He made a scarf. He handmade a scarf and made a blanket in prison. Some of the things that he did have available to him, although he didn't have money, of course, because he's not making any money, but he took time and pains to send special intimate gifts to his child. So here, the finding that his attempts at remaining in contact were nominal are really driven by the fact that he's in prison. And it's an unreasonable expectation to be able to do more than that. And I would say that the facts show that SEC made attempts, the types of attempts that are talked about in STAT, to preserve the parent-child relationship, despite the fact that he was incarcerated. In addition, as the record reflects, the foster parents, you know, when asked about whether they even gave the gifts to the child, they said no. They were not interested in allowing the child to know or be in contact with his incarcerated father for whatever reasons that they had. But again, that alone shouldn't reflect negatively against appellant. He did do the things that this court and the Supreme Court have talked about in his attempt to foster that relationship. So the finding that he abandoned the child is erroneous because what the court called nominal is what any incarcerated parent would likely have the ability to do. So we believe the finding of the statutory ground that appellant abandoned his child is clearly erroneous when you look at what he was able to do in order to try to preserve the relationship with the child. Then the district court went on to make a finding that appellant is palpably unfit. And again, the district court makes the
I think Mr. McGinney is having some internet connectivity issues. I'm not sure, however, that it's not me. I see other people moving. Okay.
Am I back? My apologies. I haven't had problems before. Where did you lose me?
You know, I can't say exactly. You were beginning to discuss the palpable unfitness finding, and shortly thereafter, we lost you. So you might want to pick up there.
All right. And I see the clock stopped at 06:49. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that's about right, unless you have some complaint about it.
I don't at all. And I apologize. I've not had issues with the Wi-Fi here at this building until today, of course. And I've been before this court many times on this Wi-Fi. So I apologize for any.
Well, we have them ourselves. And so no problem at all. We'll get the clock going at 6:49. And if it happens again, we'll stop it for you. But you may continue at this point.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So we feel that the finding that appellant abandoned the child is clearly erroneous, and it was abuse of discretion to terminate his parental rights based on that finding. As respondent points out, and we don't dispute, despite the fact that the petition alleged two statutory grounds to terminate, of course, both don't have to be proven. The court needs to just find one statutory ground to terminate. And the court also made a finding that appellant was palpably unfit to engage in the parent-child relationship. A review of the court's findings, the numerous court files that were taken judicial notice of, including the probation file, which, it's not a probation violation report is not adjudicated facts. But regardless, the court used other testimony and findings to determine that the appellant was palpably unfit. Here, the court draws this inference that because appellant was engaging in criminal conduct for a good portion of his adult life, the court presumes or fast forward to the fact, or makes a finding, that because he's engaged in criminal conduct, he's likely to continue to engage in that conduct and expose a child to criminal element and other things. But that's speculative. The facts in the case and the testimony were that appellant was in the community at the time. He was co-parenting with another woman with a child. He was employed, had ability to support the child, and he had housing with his parent. So the fact that he had a long criminal record doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to continue to commit crime. Now, again, it certainly doesn't bode well for appellant that he's back incarcerated again, but he's incarcerated for an offense that was pending before this case. So again, I would ask this court not to hold that against him, the fact that he now is incarcerated because of a crime that occurred beforehand, to draw this inference that he's going to continue to commit crime. And again, his release from incarceration is unknown, but not likely when the child is 9 years old. Under even the regular rules of incarceration in Minnesota, he's sentenced to 23 months, which means he has to serve 15 and two-thirds. He had 250 some odd days of credit, which would give him a release date in about 6 months from sentencing. The final issue, of course, is regardless, even if the petition did prove one or more of the statutory factors, of course, it needed to be or needs to be in the child's best interest to terminate appellant's parental rights. And here, the evidence in the record, there was no evidence or testimony from any witness that they believed it was in the child's best interest to have appellant's parental rights terminated. The foster parent testified that they thought that it would be a good idea for appellant to remain in contact with his child. And when asked whether it was in the child's best interest to terminate parental rights, the foster family did not answer in the affirmative. More importantly, though, the person best suited in our judicial system to advocate and give input to the court on the child's best interest would be the guardian ad litem. Here, a guardian ad litem was appointed. She was experienced. She testified that she had enough time to review the case. She interacted with all the parties. She had reviewed the significant criminal history from appellant. She spoke to the professionals who were involved with this family. This was not a child, not an infant. This is a child who was 6 years old at the time. And it was the guardian ad litem's position. And the guardian was well aware of appellant's criminal record and pending criminal record. And the respondent and the court both took issue with appellant's significant other at the time. The guardian testified that she was familiar with the significant other that was involved in appellant's life and had reviewed the social service records. So she was knowledgeable in a position and had all the facts. And she disagreed. She opined that it was not in the child's best interest to terminate appellant's parental rights, as well as the child's therapist. When asked at trial whether she believed it was in the child's best interest to terminate appellant's rights, she answered in the negative as well. So the two professionals in the best position to offer an opinion to the district court about whether it was in the child's best interest to terminate SEC's appellant's rights, SEC's parental rights, both answered in the negative. So even if this court were to find that the statutory, one of the two or both of the statutory bases were proved by clear and convincing evidence, the district court, in light of the testimony from the witnesses best suited to offer that opinion and most knowledgeable with this case, both those witnesses agreed that it was not in the child's best interest to terminate appellant's rights. And thus, the district court did abuse its discretion in terminating appellant's parental rights in this case. And we'd respectfully ask this court to reverse the district court and order this case back for a CHIPS petition at this time. I see I've only got about 10 seconds left, but that's all I have for this court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKinney. And we'll get our clock reset here. And it looks like it is ready for you now, Mr. Musburger. You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is AJ Musburger. On the record, I think it's Anthony Musburger, attorney for AB and JB, the respondents in this proceeding, the petitioners and proposed adoptive parents in the district court proceeding. In this case, the district court had issued very thorough and detailed findings and conclusions of law supporting his order terminating parental rights of SEC, and this court should take give the district court considerable deference in those findings and conclusions of law. In regards to the argument here that incarceration should not be held against SEC in regards to this abandonment issue, in the statement that's maybe the driving factor, I don't think that is the case. Certainly the district court had many reasons, findings as to why he was finding abandonment. The incarceration, actually, I think, is about the only time it was testified that SEC had been reaching out. From 2019 until 2022, when he was not incarcerated, at least not incarcerated the whole time, I think he might have had some jail stints in that time, but from 2019 until 2022, he had no contact. Or attempted no contact with the child, although he was out of prison. Other than in January, I think, of 2019, when he made a couple text messages. So it wasn't all about his inability while in prison, although, you know, he did have some ability. But, you know, in regards to that, the limited contact that he did have, I think those facts are pretty similar to the facts in the LAF case that was cited, I think, in both parties' briefs, where in that case, that father, Daly, had reached out to the mother the day after the child was born, then reached out a few days later, was able to see the child, had shown up for a court hearing, asking to be, you know, parent, contesting the adoption. In that case, the court found that wasn't sufficient enough effort, and arguably that was more effort than what SEC made here. And SEC had argued, or appellant had argued, that he didn't make contact after 2019 because he thought the child was adopted. And I think the court found that his credibility was, he didn't have any hardly, so didn't really believe all the stories that he made. But I think the record shows that he knew that wouldn't have been the case, because he did have the wherewithal to file on the father's adoptive registry, knowing that would prevent the adoption. So he filed that, and he was contacted. He testified in regards to signing consent for the adoption. So he knew that if he didn't sign a consent, the adoption wouldn't go through. And he knows that he didn't sign a consent. So he knew that the adoption didn't occur. Despite that knowledge, from 2019 through 2022, he made no effort to contact this child. In regards to the argument that this incarceration shouldn't be held against him because he didn't have a relationship with the child, really doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. That's really, I think, an argument about what his rights are and not what the child's rights are. And this is all about what's in the best interest of the child. And the fact that he may, or any parent out there, may not have an opportunity to form a relationship with a child, really should have no bearing on the issue as far as the best interests of the child. The fact is, there is no relationship. And I think it's a hard argument to say that, you know, this child at age 7 now, whether he's going to be 8 or 9 when SEC is out of prison, has never met him, has never seen him, has really no knowledge of him, how there's any excuse for that all of a sudden it's in the best interest to start that relationship. You know, whether he was in prison or whether he had some other reason not to be able to form that relationship, doesn't have any bearing on the best interest of this child at this point.
Mr. Moose, Brugger, I have a question about the best interest issue. Mr. McGeaney argued that several witnesses were asked questions about the best interest issue and refrained from saying that, in their view, the best interest of the child supported termination. I guess, do you agree with that description of the record? And if so, does that undermine the district court's findings at all?
No, well, first, I don't agree at all with that recitation of the facts, as they were not true. First, the therapist did not testify at the trial. you know, she was not there. So, you know, any statements from her, I suppose they're hearsay, but the guardian ad litem testified that she spoke to the therapist and the therapist had an opinion. But that opinion has, I'd say, limited to no credibility in that the testimony was also that she was just in the beginning stages of forming a rapport with the child, potentially only had one meeting with the child, had no knowledge, no meeting, no information at all about SEC. So for her to try and give an opinion about what's in the best interest of the child should have no bearing.
So can you be more specific? What was her testimony or what was the opinion she offered?
There was no testimony. She was not a witness. She was not called as a witness.
I thought you were describing the guardian ad litem, which was the guardian ad litem a witness?
The guardian ad litem was a witness. However, she had stated that she had asked for her attorney's opinion at the onset of the case. And that attorney's opinion was, I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically led the guardian ad litem to believe that she didn't have to look into the claim of palpable unfitness. And so really didn't investigate that at all, had zero contact with SEC, did not have knowledge of his criminal background. So again, and the court found that in his findings that she didn't do a proper investigation. So she can also not have an opinion on that issue. She was just really unaware of the circumstances of SEC when she made that opinion. I will also note that the petitioner, AB, had testified that she thought it was in the child's best interest to be adopted by her. Although she might not have testified specifically that his rights should be terminated, but that's the, you know, conclusion of why we were there that day. She could not adopt unless his rights were terminated. So that was her testimony and opinion that wasn't the child's best interest to have SEC's rights terminated. And, you know, certainly we have the two issues here then, you know, beyond the abandonment, which I think clearly was not just about abandonment while incarcerated, but abandonment after he was out. But also the notion that he's palpably unfit. And, you know, the court found there was a great deal of testimony about his criminal history. And the court finding that it was very likely that he was not going to change his ways, that, you know, for most of his adult life, he was, I was looking for how the court described him, but, you know, an antisocial criminal lifestyle created a chaotic, unstable, and unsuitable home for the child. And although there was testimony that he's changed his tune, he changed his life around in the last year, wasn't very credible. And indeed, you know, a month after the trial, he admitted to using methamphetamine. You know, the people who were testifying on his behalf were involved in criminal activity with him. You know, his girlfriend was also charged with receiving stolen property, evidently property that he stole. So they were in that venture together. Another one of his witnesses had testified that she was paying him in catalytic converters, and his convictions are for stealing catalytic converters. So I believe the court made some credibility issues there with those folks as to, you know, their support of saying that SEC turned his life around. Certainly he had not. And you know, not only the thefts, but just the ongoing drug use for years, you know, the record provided that you know, he was under the influence of methamphetamines, driving him and his girlfriend's child around. She allowed that to happen. So there were a lot of issues that the court used to determine that he's just papally unfit to be a parent. And given the long history, it's not going to turn around for him. You know, he's been in the system for a very long time. He has not been rehabilitated. And clearly, you know, the court was right on in that he did, in fact, reoffend. And that's more than just a hearsay probation violation report. That was his written statement admitting to it, and his statement on at the hearing admitting to it. So certainly he's the finding that he's papally unfit is justifiable, supported by the record. And I don't believe I have anything else, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moosbrugger. Mr. McGeaney, you have the opportunity for a 5-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. And can everybody still hear me okay? Great. I won't take up all 5 minutes. I just want to comment on a few of the arguments made by counsel. The record would reflect that appellant did attempt to have contact with his child, and the foster parents testified that they ignored those contacts because they were concerned about allowing contact. It was the same with the both while he was in prison and after he was released from prison. I believe the testimony from the foster mother was that she ignored some text messages and basically was not going to allow him to have contact with the child. So to say that he, it may be true that he stopped trying, but how, you know, why do you continue to try to make contact? The issue about my appellant's belief that the child was adopted is reflected in the record. When he filed a document in the district court rejected the filing and told him he tried to file an informal pauperis affidavit, and he got a response saying he couldn't do it because the child had been adopted. So he had information from the district court. It's in the record that the child had been adopted. That's where his belief came from. And he's not an attorney. He's not trained to navigate the legal system. Regarding the no relationship while you're in prison issue, I would equate it with if a parent is alienated from a child and they're not incarcerated, and it happens where a non-married couple, that a child is born outside the marriage, and the under Minnesota law, the father has no legal or custodial rights, and the custodial parent denies them access to the child. Is that something then? Is that abandonment as well when you can't contact your child because the custodial parent refuses to let you? And that's similar to the circumstances here. The foster parents were just refusing to allow appellant to have access to his child. The last thing I'll address is, and if I misstated, I didn't mean to misstate testimony when I thought I said the therapist didn't agree with termination, which is what the record reflects. It's on page 234 of the transcript. The guardian ad litem testified that she consulted with, I believe it's Dr. Smith was the child's therapist at Blue Stem, which is a facility in Rochester, Minnesota that provides therapy for children. The guardian testified that she spoke at length with the therapist about this case, and the therapist opined that it was not in the child's best interest to have appellant's parental rights terminated. Well, that certainly may have been a hearsay statement. It was unobjected to, and it's in the record. So to answer Judge Johnson's question, I believe the record does reflect in the transcript that both the guardian ad litem Well, the guardian testified she did not believe it was in the child's best interest. And the guardian testified that the child's therapist at Bluestem also believed it was not in the child's best interest to have appellant's parental rights terminated, and that they both believed that the child should have some kind of relationship with appellant. That's all I have, unless there's questions from the panel.
I'm seeing none. So thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision within the next 90 days. That also ends our session for this morning. And so, counsel, of course, you are dismissed. We will be closing down this Zoom session for any spectators who are here as well. Thank you all very much.